Hey, everybody, it's Hal Eisner. This is What the Hal, and welcome to another edition of this podcast. You know, one of the things I like to talk about from time to time is education. And, you know, it's another school year, and, you know, there are a lot of things to keep in mind. There's security, there's, you know, new educational techniques, but really security is a big, big deal anymore after all the school shootings we've heard of and everybody's desire to try to do whatever they can to keep that sort of thing from happening. So I brought in some superintendents for us to talk with, and I'll let them introduce themselves. All right, so let's start with introductions.
Cuauhtemoc Avila, Superintendent, Rialto Unified School District.
Callie?
I'm Callie Binks, and I'm the superintendent of the Ucaipa-Cala Mesa Joint Unified School District.
Terrence?
And I'm Terrence Davis, and I serve as the superintendent for Beaumont Unified School District.
I'm going to go back to Cuauhtemoc for a minute because you were on last year on our show, Fox 11 News in Depth, and it took me a while to get your name right, and I got it right all day today so far.
Yes, you have.
It's a name that hails from?
From Central Mexico. It's part of the Nahuatl language spoken by the Aztecs and other groups of Central Mexico, and it means descending eagle.
Descending eagle. So
yes.
I'm phonetically saying Cuauhtemoc. Is that the way?
That is correct.
All right. Very good. Descending eagle. I may call you descending eagle. So let me ask you, descending. I don't mean to be condescending, eagle. Let me ask you to start us off here with some conversation about security, because one of the things that each year parents worry about when they send their kids off to school is that, God forbid, something should happen while their kids are in school.
Yes, so we obviously look at safety plans. We retrain personnel, security personnel and administrators throughout the district on the novelties, making sure that they are revisiting their safety plans. But more importantly for us, we're really revisiting the time and the amount of resources that we invest in the social emotional health of students.
And you haven't really had any big incidents on campus at any of your schools.
We have not, but we don't want them to materialize, and therefore we're focusing on prevention and looking at those signs of kids that are having their own crisis, their own traumas internally. And so we're providing, again, the wellness centers and a lot of support to build relationships between students and between students and personnel so that they can trust the adults whenever they see something happening, either for other kids or from outside groups.
There's been such a debate over guns in schools, and even to the point of the president saying that teachers, in some cases, should have a gun if they're well-trained so that they can, you know, take care of the kids if necessary. Callie, what do you think about that?
Well, it is a hot topic, that's for sure. My husband is a retired sergeant from the police department, and he's now teaching. He's doing law enforcement career opportunities. And we talked about it in depth. And while safety is our concern, we want our teachers to be able to teach and do that with 100% of their attention to students. And so we work with the resources we have. We work with our facilities to make sure they're secure. We have school resource officers. For us, it's through the sheriff's department. And we put in other precautionary measures so that our teachers are free to teach.
If he was here, I would ask your husband, would he be comfortable bringing a gun to school and so that he and his classroom are safe? What do you think he would answer that with?
We had a long conversation about that, and he's, of course, I would say a really good officer and was a great leader and well-trained. However, he's now focused on teaching students, and so I worry about attention being divided. You know, things go on in classrooms. You have to be you're on your feet all the time, and you're watching sometimes 35, depending in PE, a larger class size, and so your attention is divided already. So I think that now that he's got a class of about 75 this year, he would tell you something different than when he first started teaching.
Yeah, because you also worry about whether a student can get your gun.
Absolutely.
Whether somebody bad who came on campus can get your gun. And so these are concerns, right, Terrence?
Absolutely.
What has your district done?
What we've done this past year is we've implemented a program that ensures that we're practicing procedures like lockdown drills, safety drills, and ensuring that our students know what to do in the case of an emergency. And one of the things we talk about is if you see something, say something.
And that seems to be the catchphrase now, but you've actually done something above and beyond. to your newest school, which is called?
Starlight Elementary.
Okay. So brand new elementary school. What did you do to this brand new school?
So one of the things that we did was to ensure safety is have one point of entry. So everyone comes in through the same entry point. And when we do have parents or volunteers, it's not an open campus. So we just don't come on campus with our students. There is a process, a check-in process that goes through a database to ensure we know who's on campus.
So let me get the image in my head. The school is there and you have some kind of peripheral wall or gate or what?
Secured by gates. So the only time students come in, like in the morning, is through one gate. But once school starts, all of the gates are locked. Everyone has to come in through the administration office.
All right, God forbid something happens at that school. All the gates are locked. There's a fire or something. What do you do?
Through the safety protocol, then there are scheduled emergency exits. So it may be on the north side, south side, just depending on what the layout is and what's been practiced.
But somebody would have to go unlock those gates that have been locked to keep people from coming in any way other than the one way.
Correct. Correct.
And so that's the safety protocol you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. One entry point.
What do you think about the idea of teachers having guns?
You know, that's something that comes up from time to time. And what I say is whatever's going to keep us in the best safe scenario.
So you don't have a problem with it.
What's going to keep us safe? And so when I get input from parents, when I hear from staff, we don't really dabble in that. We work strongly with law enforcement. So they're assisting us with training to ensure we're safe. I focus on what's safe.
Nobody in this room right now has had an incident on a campus. So you're all knock on, what is that, wood or is that some kind of
synthetic
vinyl? Yeah.
Yeah.
Knock on whatever this is, everything's been good. But you never know when that day is that something might all of a sudden go south.
So one of the things I would say is what we've learned in the nation last year and what we talk about, it's not if, it's when.
You really believe that?
So that's why we need to practice safety measures.
You think someday there's going to be something?
It's when. Look in the media. Look at our schools across the nation. It's when.
And so given that it's when, and you're shaking your head also, you think that can happen as well. But you don't have a one entryway plan into a school, which means you're more exposed?
Well, we don't have a brand new school, so we're working with older facilities. We have schools that are 50, 60 years old. So we've implemented this year, we're implementing a visitors management system where for the safety of our volunteers and parents that come on campus, if there were to be a large earthquake, we need to know who's on campus so that we can have appropriate responses. And we work very, very closely with our police and fire department and our cities, and they tell us we can't go everywhere. So you go prepare, make sure you're first aid trained, make sure you're disaster trained, make sure that you know how to run, fight, hide, that you have planned ingress and egress. And you have to work with the facilities you have because there aren't dollars allocated specifically for safety at this point. And so we have to do those things.
But you've been also working with your teachers on CPR and different kinds of trainings. How do they respond to that?
We've worked with all staff, so our certificated, classified, and management staff, and have become a FEMA affiliate for the Community Emergency Response Team program.
And what does that mean?
It means that we are trained so that in a disaster, we know how to respond. We practice search and rescue, and we have school plans like every other district, but we have certificates. We have backpacks, we have helmets, we have all the tools that we need to help our city in case of a disaster.
That doesn't sound normal for a school district. Do you guys, the other two superintendents here, do you guys have this sort of a thing going on?
We do not. We do have it with our local fire department.
But you're not a FEMA certified kind of...
No, but they've come out and they provide a CPR training to all of our students at the high schools.
And what about you, Terrence?
We do have relationships with the organization, so it's about how do they assist us in preparing, but it's not as in depth as they have in Yucaipa.
So we talk about safety, we talk about security, and I want to talk a little bit about infrastructure because I've noticed in a lot of schools that were using temporary buildings because the schools were getting more and more populated, they needed to suddenly have new classrooms, so all of a sudden they'd pop up a new temporary building. What's happening with those sort of things now? Because I'm noticing that some schools in my area now are building actual infrastructures to replace the temporary buildings. Are you using temporary buildings or are you kind of past that now?
We still have temporary buildings, and We would love to replace them all with permanent buildings, but we don't have the funding to do that. But we, in terms of the overcrowding piece, we're in a pretty good place right now in Yucaipa-Cala Mesa.
Well, what's your average classroom size?
As far as a number of students?
20 students, 30 students?
25 in elementary and up to 35 in secondary.
Is that, how's that viewed, Cuauhtemoc, as being, is that large? Is that medium?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask the teachers, of course, that's large. But if you ask just educators in general, especially administrators, it's pretty average.
And is that what you do, 25 to 30?
On average, yes.
And Terrence, 25 to 30?
Yes.
So that seems to be an average number in this room. Let's talk about education, because you get down to reading, writing, and arithmetic really being the bottom line of what all this is about. Because our goal is to always educate the next generation, teach them how to read, write, and do math, which is still an issue for me sometimes. There was the new math. Now there's math I don't even know how to read. What's going on with education?
So it's still the same basic arithmetic, but it's a lot more rigorous and more relevant.
It is more rigorous.
Yes.
I mean, my son would come home with calculus books. I thought calculus was something you got rid of at the dentist office. That was a joke.
Got it.
Okay, good. Calculus, that's tough stuff. I mean, for me, it was geometry, and it wasn't calculus, it was algebra. You know, it's changed a lot. I mean, is that because of technology?
In part because of technology and also the global competition. A lot of the jobs that are being exported or being a lot of the employees being flown in from other parts of the country because our kids are not able to compete at the same level. So we are challenged to expand or intensify the curriculum to make sure that our students graduate prepared for the 21st century jobs.
When we talk about education, we talk about going to a class, learning something, coming out, getting a degree, and being successful. When I went to college, which was, I think our principal was a fellow named Fred Flintstone, maybe. but now, you know, you do have these high-tech jobs. I know my son is in college learning about computer science. These were things that really weren't around when I went to school. So technology is constantly changing. That means education has to constantly change.
Absolutely. And the mindset of the educators has to change, because while the technology has changed and we have to keep up with it, some of the educators do not want to change the teaching modalities to really provide these kids a quality and competitive education.
Why is that?
Just people that who are set in their ways and feel that because of the way they were educated or the way that education was when they started teaching, that it should kind of remain the same and kind of refuse to challenge themselves.
Is that thing about if it's not broken, you don't have to fix it? Is that what that is?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you have the same sort of issues?
You know, I have a little bit. I agree with what Cuauhtemoc is saying, but I also think that for veteran educators, there needs to be additional training. I always equate it to an emergency room doctor. Would you want an emergency room doctor who has no additional training from 30 years ago to be the one who responds in a life and death situation? And so we have to make sure that we are reinventing ourselves as leaders to make sure our teachers don't have a fear. You know, there's even a fear in the community. I have a population in our community that we are educating on computer literacy, how to have emails, how to do those things, because, you know, what you don't know is as you can be fearful of. And so we want to make sure that we are helping the way of the future, because now we have a new marriage. I call it a new marriage. We work very closely with business and workforce development boards, and we are now kind of all joined at the hip, which I think is a really good thing, because we are able to then set our guide for helping students be competitive in the job market.
We've always sort of heard, and it feels like always, that teachers don't get paid well. That you know, and that they should get paid better. That doesn't change, does it?
It does not. But what I want to go back to is some of the things that we've seen in Beaumont, and going back to the training, is that the environment has changed and that the teacher is no longer the holder of the information to deliver to the students. The information is there. The teacher is responsible for facilitating the information to the students, and students learning from the teacher, students learning from each other. And so I've seen some of those veteran teachers take hold to that and facilitate that. So the classroom environment looks different. It's not a teacher and I'm delivering to these students sitting in rows. It is a collaborative learning space, and that's pretty powerful.
That's a change. The most collaborative thing I remember when I was in school, I hope I say this right, they had this box, and it had little cards in it, and it was, I want to say SR something.
SRA. I remember it as well.
Do you remember that?
I do.
And so whenever SRA came up, which was a special thing, it was like all of a sudden exciting in the room because we were going to do something unusual. And I guess, you know, now with computers and laptops and iPads and all this other stuff, it's just all changed.
Well, I love going into classrooms because every day is what you described. It's something new and unusual, and our teachers are growing in the ability to let the learners lead the learning because the information is so accessible. So what question comes up, they solve a problem. And that goes back to what Cuauhtemoc was saying about the curriculum. It's still the same, but it's the application of problem solving and understanding how to do a problem and conquer it and research it and make it authentic research. And that's really what the state standards are asking our kids to be able to do.
State standards, you have these tests that say how good your students are. How good are your students in your school district in Yucaipa?
Our students are doing well on the new test. I think it's still, it's all computer based, and so your keyboarding has to be in good shape in order to, you know, really do the test well without worrying about, you know, what you're typing and all those things. We can always do better, and we will continue to press in, but it's really, you look at the test as one measurement, but we really have to look broader than that.
I'm going to sound like a fossil, but ASDF, JKL, semicolon. How about that? I learned that in high school with a typewriter before there were computer keyboards. ASDF, JKL, semicolon. I got that right, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Do I get an A on the test?
A plus.
Thank you, Super.
Unsure. We gotta see the assessment.
We gotta see the assessment.
The measurement. Yes.
Yeah. Well, look, you don't want to see my assessment. Report cards were not one of my favorite things in school, but I got through it. You know, I got through it, and you know, I remember all the good things that came out of school, and it was, you know, it was a great experience. And I think, you know, school is a very important thing on not only an educational level, it's on a social level as well. And getting to know people and getting to interact with people and being able to get along with people. But bullying is a big problem. You still have issues of kids being tough on other kids. What do you do about that?
You know, I think when I was in school, I can think back of a few times when I may have been able to say, hey, that person wasn't very nice to me, you know, were they bullying me? But now social media is a huge part of what our kids deal with 24 hours a day. And that screen time almost becomes like an obsession, you know, to see how many likes you can get. And if you don't get likes, is that, you know, is that something that makes you less popular? And we have to do a lot of education, not only with our students, but with our teachers and administrators and our community. And we have a series focused on that this year, along with our sheriff's department, to help educate our parents on some of the things that they really need to watch for so that they can make sure the health and welfare of their children are being guarded. And we need to be able to do the same thing.
How much of a problem has social media become in school? I mean, you know, they've got their phones out, right?
It hasn't been as big as you might expect, at least during the instructional day. Instruction is still takes place, but it's usually after the things that are said and done that really create a lot of problems for the administration.
Bullying is still an issue in your district as well?
To some degree, it is, and it's something that we continue to address with our positive behavior interventions and supports district-wide, which is really geared towards educating the students about the impact of their behavior versus intensifying the discipline based on that behavior.
I'm just curious. So a student comes into the classroom, has their smartphone, they sit down at their desk to listen to the lesson of the day, but the smartphone is still sitting on the desk, or do you forbid smartphones from being exposed in a classroom?
We don't forbid it, but we do have, you know, it varies from classroom to classroom based on the teacher's expectation, and we do encourage the teachers to use it as a resource, and many teachers use that as a tool.
Well, I can see that, you know, yeah. Google this and look mm-hmm. it up, right. But why wouldn't you tell students, keep it in your backpack? I don't want to see it while we're learning because you may be looking off to the side to see if you got a text message. Why wouldn't you do that?
Well, in part because kids of today learn in many different ways, and they're able to finagle the different things that are happening. And while kids may be focused on their phone for a minute of time, learning can still take place.
I like that word finagle because I was a pretty good finagler myself when I was in school. So, but we didn't have smartphones back then. Look, I guess the bottom line is security is an issue. Learning and teaching is an issue. But then there's also the issues of money. And we talk about things like pensions and concerns about teachers not feeling that they are necessarily getting the benefits that they want or will get what they want if there are issues with their pension funds. And that affects the daily routine because you can't go to work and feel good about something if you're worried about something else. How do you deal with that sort of a thing?
We really focus on the environment, how we are best supporting our teachers. So if teachers feel like I'm not receiving the compensation that I need, what can we do to support them? Can we create an environment where they feel valued and they feel cared about? And working with our union leadership, that's what we hear from them. It's not always about money, but it's about how they feel and how you treat them.
Well, and that's an important issue. Well, why don't you pick up on what he said?
Well, I think absolutely people want to go to a place where they feel valued. They want the opportunity. Teachers are creative, and they want to be able to create in their classrooms and have students learn. I think that the other piece of that is the transparency of the budget. So the more transparent you are with your budget and where your money's going, the better off you are, because I think everybody would agree that California is underfunded. We're one of the lowest funded states in the nation. And so with that, we also have a lot of students with needs, like other states, but we have a concentration of kids that really take additional resources. We want to make sure that we educate everyone equitably. And so with that, building the understanding, not just with your employee groups, but with your community as well, of what the budget looks like and where you're spending your money and giving input is getting their input.
I've always had a soft spot for teachers because I know how hard they work, and I particularly felt a certain level of emotion for them when they have to go buy their own pencils and erasers and things to give their students. And I've always thought that that just seemed wrong, that it couldn't be more wrong that a person has to go to work and buy their own tools. That should be provided. Why can't I get my head around that? Because it probably happens in all of your districts, right?
It does. I was a first grade teacher, and I taught regular compensatory ed in first grade, and then I also taught special education, and I had a smaller room. And I wanted that room to look like a place that kids wanted to come every single day. And so I did spend my own money to create my classrooms. And now there's Pinterest. And so you walk into these classrooms and they're absolutely decorated like a magazine. And I know our teachers do spend a lot of their own money to create that environment. And we are so grateful for that. But those basic things we need to provide, and we need to listen to our teachers. So, of course, there's budgets that are set. And so Hal's a fifth grade teacher and he needs 52 copies more than he's allocated. We're going to give you 52 copies because you need them to teach. But we do have to manage our resources. And so pencils and pens and paper and crayons and scissors and all those basic things and textbooks, we do give them to our teachers. But, you know, there's a desire always to do more.
Let me just sort of wrap it up a little bit here and let you sort of have a final thought. And I guess, you know, I'm wondering, is 2018 any different than 2017? Was that any different than 2016?
The answer is going to be no different. The core issues that we're continuing to deal with will spill over into this coming year. The challenge is, how can we make the conditions for both students and teachers a lot better? So a lot will depend on the leadership and the creativity of the leadership.
Do you get goosebumps and cold sweats when you hear about a school shooting in another part of the country? And you think about your own school at that moment?
I do, but I try to keep myself in perspective and keep my composure so that I not do things reacting to things that are happening outside the district.
Somehow, it's hard for me to believe that 2018 is just exactly the same emotionally as 2017, just simply because we've had all this violence on campus. And not yours, but other campuses across the country.
I would agree with you. That feeling, Terrence and I had the conversation on the drive-in about the responsibility we have for the students, and that parents entrust us with their most precious commodity, right? Their most precious person in their lives. And so that responsibility is huge. And we do everything in our power. But even in a neighboring district, when something tragic happens, we feel it to our very core. It's very difficult. And so for me, 2018 is hopeful because in our last school year, we watched what happened in Florida. We watched what happened in San Bernardino. We saw what happened in Inland Regional Center locally. And every time one of those incidents occurs, the only thing that we can do is to be better for it. And so the emphasis of what we're doing this year on school security is guided by that responsibility and learning from the other tragedies.
But I think it is interesting that what Terrence's district has done is to take a new school and create an exclusive entryway, and it's the only way to get into the school. And, you know, despite the fact that you haven't had any issues, and this should probably secure that feeling of having problems to some extent, 2018 is different because you didn't do that in 2017 or 2016 or 2015.
And I think what we're doing by listening to parents, students, and the community, we're showing that we're listening and we're doing something different. And I would say to you, in terms of you go back, Hal, to your point about education, this is education, yes. I don't think you can get to education unless you have this shared commitment. You have everyone involved and you're listening to make a safe environment. Then we can have those high educational opportunities.
And you remember after the Florida incident and after other incidents where students would say, I can't go back to school. I don't feel safe. And you know what? That didn't necessarily apply only to those schools.
That's right.
Because after those sort of things happened and they got into the media and they got on TV and they got on radio and they got on computers and they got online and they got on Reddit and this and that, students in other parts of the country may have felt exactly the same way. And you're all shaking your head.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. Bottom line is what?
Let's take care of our kids. Our teachers do an outstanding job, and we're here to support them.
Good enough. Oh, you know what I forgot? What the hell?
What the hell?
All right. Real good. A big thanks to Cuauhtemoc Avila, Terrence Davis, and Callie Binks. All superintendents in smaller school districts, but they face many of the big issues that bigger school districts face as well. If you have a chance and you haven't yet, please subscribe to our podcast, What the Hal? And if you have a second and you'd like to, give us a few stars. Let us know that you think we're doing okay, or let us know what you think we could do better. Until next time, have a good one.